Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on private ownership of the Southern Forests right after this. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership, and bonds are the exact opposite to private property? Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that you can do, and the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. If you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package, and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send an email to request your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. This is the January 2005 Ecologic Powerhouse. There's an article in here about how private ownership saved the Southern Forest. Now, we all know that forest land has to be measured and it has to be managed by government. My God, how could we have forest lands without the Department of Agriculture and without the Forest Service, Ranger Rick, with all the parks and all of the rest of the accoutrements that go along with it? Are there any private forests in America? And if there are, do those private forests do anything for our society, for our economy, for our nation? Do they compete with? Are they as good as? Are they better than the national forest system? Is there a reason why we should have private forest land as opposed to public forest land? I think you'll be surprised. The Ecologic Powerhouse is the opposite to the Sierra Club, Nature Conservancy, National Parks, and the Audubon Society. It's an ecologic news magazine, but it's from the perspective of private property, private ownership, and private rights, as opposed to public ownership and a socialist philosophy. A communist ideology, the opposite to the Ten Planks, to the Communist Manifesto. Now, I certainly don't begrudge the Sierra Club or Nature Conservancy or the Audubon Society or the United States government or the United Nations or the Communist Party from selling their ideology. And if you want to buy it, you certainly have every right to do that. But I contend that you should see both sides of the coin, that there is a heads, but there's another side to the coin that we call tails. If there's an up, there's a down. If there's a left, there's a right. If there's a head, there's a tail. If there's light, there's dark. And when we talk about ecology, I don't think the Audubon Society or the Sierra Club have a lock hold on everything that's ecological or everything that's right. You know, it was God that told us first to dress and keep the garden. And I'll be the first to admit, we didn't dress and keep the garden, but I'm not sure that the Sierra Club, Nature Conservancy, or Audubon Society have the solution. And I certainly don't think that the United States government or the Forest Service are anywhere close to a solution. Charles E. Tomlinson wrote an article reprinted with permission by the powerhouse, the ecologic powerhouse. Listen to the story. I've been distracted for the last few years by other matters, and I have just recently returned to my world of natural resource management to discover that the major happening in at least the last two decades has slipped by without any notice whatsoever. Remember the 1990s, the radical environmental movement, screaming that the world as we knew it was destined to doom and destruction because of the nasty chip mills, the clear-cut destruction of our forests, the pollution of our waters caused by cutting trees and all of the other chicken little mantras. Well, near the end of that decade, a study was begun in order to find out just how badly the forests in the southern United States were being damaged. Not an industry study. Not a study by the industry that would be tainted by profit motive, but rather an honest-to-goodness government study. That's right, a study of the southern forests, the private forest lands of the southern states, done by our government, pure in heart, uninfluenced by anything but a pure, unadulterated search for the truth. The truth, boys and girls. So the U.S. Department of Agriculture Forest Service took the lead in the study, and they enlisted the help from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Tennessee Valley Authority. For more than 2 years, these government agencies worked with more than 25 scientists and analysts, and they worked on this study, and they just worked and worked and worked their hearts out for 2 years. More than 100 scientists from universities, state and federal agencies, industry, and conservation organizations provided peer reviews to enhance the accuracy and the completeness of this report. Finally, in late 2001, the report was made public, and it was received with huge waves of total apathy, and it has been totally ignored, and no one has printed the report. Now, why on earth would our government spend all that money with all those resources and all that time, effort, and energy and come up with this report with all of these great findings in it and then not publish it? How come Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw and Peter Jennings and Fox News and the Nature Conservancy and the Sierra Club and the Audubon Society aren't out on the rooftops preaching and teaching the success of the Southern Forest Management Project? Why? Well, the report was of no use to the radical environmental movement, because with painstaking research and documented facts, it totally destroyed every assertion that they had made concerning the forests of the southern United States. And it gave the lie to their chicken little scenarios, and it was impregnable to their attack because of the unimpeachable integrity of those who had created the study. So the radical environmental community just acted as if it had never happened. That's why you never heard anything about it. It's kind of like Iraq. You hear about the bombings and the suicide attacks every day. You don't hear anything about the successes that our troops and our soldiers have. Oh, you get to see the faces one at a time on the Lair News Hour of every one of them that's killed over there, but you don't see the successes and the victories that our troops produce there. That's not education, boys and girls. That's propaganda. That's indoctrination. But what about the natural resource managers, the landowners, and the true environmentalists? Have we been so cowed by the beating that we have been getting from the fringe, the lunatic environmental fringe, that we recognize good things only by some lessening of the pain that we endure? Don't we know vindication when we see it? Well, the Southern Forest Resource Assessment documents one of the greatest natural resource management triumphs in the history of man. From the stump landscapes of the early 1900s, the southern forests have recovered to become one of the wood baskets of the world. The southern forests are vibrant, never static, quickly responding to changing conditions. The southern forests meet the needs of today and are poised to embrace tomorrow. The resource assessment does not cover the why of this marvelous transformation, but I'm going to tell you why. It's because the southern forests are privately owned. That's right. They're privately owned, private property. The essential difference between the southern forests and the burning, stagnant forests of the West, the looted forests of foreign lands, is that of private ownership. That's the difference. Each landowner managing his own lands and doing it very well, as the assessment shows, for his own perceived self-interest. Now, maybe we do not respond to the study because we are so used to having things presented to us in sound bites by talking heads. Perhaps we have forgotten that there is work attached to a study and work attached to understanding a study. So let's do a little work here. First of all, the Southern Forest Resource Assessment is a government study. What that means is that those who researched and wrote it have no incentive to paint rosy pictures. The future of government foresters, in fact, of all government employees, lies in finding areas of concern and alarm and problems that will justify their continued employment to solve those problems and those concerns. So if you work for the government, failure is necessary in order to get the money that you need to continue your life's work at solving these problems. Successful government programs are killed because there's no need to spend money if the problem is ever solved. It's like medicine. If you ever discover a cure for cancer, it destroys the American Cancer Society, whose only reason for existence is to find a cure for cancer. So we're always looking for a cure for cancer, but we don't ever want to find one, do we? And put ourselves out of business, like the March of Dimes did with polio? God forbid that would ever happen. So witness the Man on the Moon program for the U.S. government. In government, success means cuts in funding. In government, success means failure, means increased funding. So if you succeed, your funding is cut off and you're put out of business. If you fail, you get increased funding. So what this suggests is that we should not expect the Southern Forest Resource Assessment to loudly proclaim the success of the forest management, the forest resource management in the South, because somebody might say, well, let's put that into operation in Arizona in the public forests. Let's do it in California and Alaska. Let's do the same thing that succeeded in the South. You saw that, boys and girls, just recently. Remember? The El Al Airlines, the Israeli airline, they arm their pilots. The cockpit crew up there in one of those El Al airliners is packing heat, and they've never had an airliner hijacked. How in the hell are you going to hijack it? Go up and knock on the door? Pilot up there will blow you away. So, to solve the problem in America, we spent $37 billion to create Homeland Security. And we, to this day, have refused to arm the pilots up in the cockpit. We're not going to have that, not in America. Now, that's failure. And it spends $37 billion a day rather than spend $5 million on some 45 automatics to hire the pilots or to give to the pilots. Instead of spending $5 million, we want to spend $37 billion. We don't want to spend $5 million once. We want to spend $37 billion a year forever because it hires, because it employs, because there's a problem. We're constantly threatened with hijackers. I've told you in the past, the solution to that is simple. Just arm the cockpit crew. Better yet, just arm everybody on the airplane. Just let everybody that wants to pack, keep packing. And then wait until four guys try to hijack it. Can you imagine what would happen to the four hijackers on that American Airlines plane that crashed out in Pennsylvania if one of those passengers on the plane had had a gun? They'd have never hijacked that airplane. Of course, all the people got killed because they weren't armed. Now, of course, the bleeding heart liberals will say, well, we can't have armed people on airplanes. What do you think would happen if you had four armed hijackers and 54 armed passengers? That happened just recently. A guy came into a store, and in this store, there happened to be three or four guys in there that were armed. They were all members of a shooting club. And the armed robber pulled a gun on the store clerk over there, who was one of their members, and the other three members that were in the store all pulled guns and they all killed the robber. Now that's what happens when you have a store with five customers in it and they're all armed. A robber comes in and the five customers kill the robber. That's the end of the problem. We can't have that in the Department of Agriculture, and we can't have that in the Western Forest. So remember that. That's why we need the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, and the Audubon Society. It's to keep the problem alive forever so that they can continually milk us for more and more tax dollars. But now in the southern forests, where the forests are owned by private landowners, guys own 80 acres of forest here or 300 acres of forest over there, not millions of acres that go up in smoke owned by the government up in Idaho, just small acreages. Instead of one landowner, the USA Incorporated, there are thousands of landowners. So over the last 100 years, this management in the South, which you should look for it to outline the areas of concern and alarm for the future, and this it does. Now this is talking about the Southern Forest Resource Assessment, to loudly proclaim the success of forest resource management in the South over the past 100 years. Now, next we should examine the documentation in the assessment and draw conclusions about what are now the Southern forests in light of information about what they used to be. And here is where the good news lies. We discovered that the area of the Southern forests has remained surprisingly stable since the early 1900s. We're not paving over our forests. We see that our forests are growing more wood than we are removing from them. In the past 50 years, we have increased the balance in our forest savings account by over 73%. Think of that. Over the past 50 years, we've added 73% more wood to those forests in the South. How much has been added to the forests of the West? Aren't they burning around 2 to 4 million acres of forest land a year, and then they leave those trees out there to rot? Isn't that the forest management program of the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, and the Audubon Society with the Bureau of Land Management and the USDA? Now think of it. In the past 50 years, in the southern forests, we have increased the balance in our savings, our forest savings account, by more than 73%. The interest in this account growth should mean that even with the increased harvest, we will still be adding to our balance in the future. Rather than running out of trees, we're growing more than we can use, at least in the south. In addition, we're learning ways to make our forests more productive. We can grow twice as much timber on our land if the markets tell us to do so. We see that the South now produces more timber than any other single nation in the world. Let me repeat that. The southern states, North and South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, Tennessee, those southern states produce more timber now than any other single nation in the world. That includes Canada. The present forests of the South are now the major wood-producing area of the world. Contrasted to the forests of my youth and earlier, the change is phenomenal. A real, concrete example of successful natural resource management. And it's called private property. It's a wild new concept. Now, we should look at the assessment to determine just what the areas of concern and alarm in this report actually are, and then make judgments about just how alarmed and concerned we should be. The most interesting thing that I found was that none of the radical environmental Chicken Little scenarios even made it to the concern and alarm stage of the report. Chip mills, clear cutting, harvesting trees, did not even make the first cut of activities to be alarmed and concerned about. No surprise to those of us in the natural resource management business, but I am sure that it's a major disappointment to those who make up the ELF, the Earth Liberation Front, and their ilk. The Southern Forest Resource Assessment goes on to find many areas of concern and alarm in the southern forests. Critters facing extinction, changes in land use, disease and insect infestations, fragmentation of forest areas, increasing recreational and other uses of forest lands. The list goes on and on. Now remember, they had almost 3 years to discover these areas of concern and alarm, and no one accuses them of being lazy or of not spending enough taxpayer money. But the big area of alarm and concern was determined to be the increasing use of forest for urban expansion. In fact, the assessment says that urbanization poses the single largest and most permanent threat to the sustainability of the southern forests. So let's work on this a little. Let's use our heads. The assessment predicts, based on a forecasting model, that a total of 31 million acres, 31 million forested acres in the South, will be gobbled up by cities over 48 years. That's their big concern. Ignoring the fact that all forests of natural resources more than 5 years into the future have one common failing, and that is, they have all been proven wrong in just 5 years. So let's just look at these numbers a little closer. The assessment shows that the southern forests contain a total of 214 million acres. So our 31 million acres lost to urbanization represents 14.5% of the total. But this loss is spread over 48 years, so the annual loss of forest area to urbanization is only 0.3% per year. But there's more. At the same time that the nasty cities are eating our forests, open farmland is being planted to trees or allowed to revert back to forest at a forecasted rate that will increase the forest land by 25 million acres in this same 48-year period. So ignoring again the fallacy of paying attention to 48-year forecasts, this means that the forest recaptures 25 million out of the 31 million acres that it lost to urbanization during the same time. This represents a net loss of 2.8% of our forest lands, or over the next 48-year period, an annual loss of 0.06% of our forest lands per year. Now, that is not a number that strikes terror in this old heart, especially since it is, by the nature of its computation, totally wrong. So I do not wish to intimate that there are no areas of concern or no areas of alarm in our southern forest. I think that the Southern Forest Resource Assessment does an admirable job of identifying these areas. But I would assert that the solutions to these concerns and alarms lie in the realm of encouraging the people who created our marvelous southern forests, the private landowners, to be aware of and perhaps to address these concerns, each and every one of them, for, of, and by himself. This means letting the market and the marketplace make it worth their while to do so. The traditional approach to concerns and alarms has been to pass laws and restrictions to private action. This always results in bureaucracy. It results in waste, stagnation, and eventual destruction of the very resource in question, as it has throughout the West in all of the public forests. Here's a case in point. The national forests of the western United States. The correct response to areas of concern and alarm in our southern forests is to keep government out of the way, to keep government out of the forests, and to allow the landowners to deal with the opportunities and to respond to the markets that areas of concern and alarm usually obscure. Now, I recognize that privately owned forests represent chaos in the minds of socialists who wish to find certainty in this uncertain world. But there is no telling what is going to happen next. You can look back at the past, and you can make projections and estimates based upon what you saw happen before. You can build models to forecast the future, and you can point to the results with concern and with alarm, but you cannot predict what private owners operating in free markets are going to do. And we all like things to be very neat and tidy, don't we? So our response to chaos is usually to try to fix it, to bring order to the chaos. But if it ain't fixed, or if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But it's been discovered, for example, that the beating of our heart is a chaotic system, and it does not respond well to efforts to make it neat and tidy. It seems that systems that need to be agile and efficient, in case one encounters a saber-toothed tiger, must be unstable and chaotic. And I suggest that the heartbeat of our economic system is similar. And fixing it, making it neat and tidy, is not the best way to make it work for most of us. We should learn to accept and to embrace this lack of order and tidiness as the price we pay for a system that is responsive and efficient. History and the Southern Forest Resource Assessment has shown that just because our southern forests are not predictable, that does not mean that they do not work. From the chaos of private ownership has come the brilliant success of the southern forests during the last 100 years. It is a success story worthy of emulation worldwide. Now, keeping government regulation and control out of our private forests is the key to providing the future forests that we and our descendants want, the nation needs, and the world can use. It's the shining example of how natural resources should be managed. Now, Charles E. Tomlinson has spent the last 47 years as a forest manager and consultant. His clients have been mostly private landowners, but he has also provided services to corporations, trusts, and governments. Mr. Tomlinson is author of a warm, compelling personal statement of his views on man's relationship to nature, A View from My Stump, and he can be contacted at cet@highway.net, and that's spelled HIWAAY.net. Again, the email address for Mr. Tomlinson is cet@HIWAAY.net. Remember, the Ecologic Powerhouse is a conservative ecologic newsletter or news magazine that's published monthly. It's published by the Ecologic Powerhouse, 1200 North White Sands Boulevard, Suite 110, Alamogordo, New Mexico, 88310. Again, it's the Ecologic Powerhouse, 1200 North White Sands Boulevard, Suite 110, Alamogordo, New Mexico, 88310. Now, if you want to call them, the phone number is 505-434-3195. Again, that's area code 505-434-3195, the Environmental Conservation Organization Incorporated is the corporate owner. This is the number 25, January 2005 edition. Well, let me give you a couple of reminders while we're here at about the halfway point here in our seventh broadcast this week. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network of this radio station. But they should. And for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Remember, we put out a free 4-hour introductory CD package. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school. Remember that number, 417-273-4967, to order yours. And one more. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events. And we do it from the scriptural perspective 7 days a week. The sources of information that we use on this program are believed to be true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. The endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we recommend or endorse will reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, or sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans who do not endorse the opinions or beliefs expressed here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We endorse them, but they don't necessarily endorse us. There's another neat article here in the Ecologic Powerhouse. This is the January 2005 Ecologic Powerhouse, which is called Endangered Species Act Reform by Henry Lamb. Henry Lamb is one of the, I think he's the executive director of the organization. And one of the board members. He wrote an article, and I thought that it was well worth our time to consider it. It's called the Endangered Species Act. And this Endangered Species Act has been a nightmare for many people. I remember reading a story about some guy out in California, and I don't know, it was some mouse out there, some little critter, and he ran over one with his tractor driving in from the field, and got the government agency just went berserk out there, and they were bouncing off the walls and off the ceiling and one thing and another, and wanted to fine him $50,000 and one thing and another. And you know, with these endangered species, and if the government comes in here and raises hell with you, what you have here is a takings. You know, that's prohibited under the Fifth Amendment to our Constitution. Now, of course, if a government agent can come in here and cower you, intimidate you, threaten you, and induce you to pay these fines, and then shut up about it, well, then more power to him. But they don't have that power. It doesn't come from the law. It comes from their intimidation. And they work hand in glove with organizations, you know, like the Sierra Club and Nature Conservancy. And these institutions don't give a rat's ass about conservation. They care about bureaucracy and socialization. That's the objective. So don't ever forget that. The opposite to that is called private property, which comes from thou shalt not steal and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. But, of course, that comes from the Bible and these people, from these radical environmental movements. Don't have anything to do with the Bible or anything in common with God. I'm not sure that the conservatives have anything in common with God either. They use God's name every once in a while, but I'm not sure that they practice the Ten Commandments. But they're a hell of a lot closer than these radical communists and socialists. So if you're looking for an ecologic magazine, a conservative viewpoint of ecology and the environment, then the Ecologic Powerhouse is what you're looking for. If you're looking for a radical liberal magazine, then Nature Conservancy or the Audubon Society or National Parks or something is the recommended socialist fare. All right, here's Mr. Lamb's story. He said, the return of the Endangered Species Act has been a high priority. Or he said, not return, but reform. Let me start over. The reform of the Endangered Species Act has been a high priority since the act expired in October of 1992. But Congress has continued the act through annual appropriations, but fundamental reform has been blocked by conflicting political pressures. House Resource Committee Chairman Richard Pombo says the next 2 years offer the best opportunity that we've ever had, and he says it's our best shot to move forward, and I'm going to do it. Pombo, who represents California's 11th District, was elected to Congress by campaigning to reform the Environmental Species Act and to protect private property rights. In his first term, he wrote a comprehensive 1,500-page bill that fixed every problem in the Endangered Species Act. I got beat severely, savagely, Pombo says. The bill never saw the light of day. As committee chairman, he has been able to influence legislation and guide it through the House, only to watch it die in the Senate. For the next Congress, a new strategy is being developed. The new approach will not be another 1,500-page bill. Instead, there will be multiple single-focus bills introduced by different congressmen. Each bill will aim at correcting a single problem, rather than creating a single big target for the opposition. Several targets moving at different times, at different speeds, will be much more difficult to defeat. I might pause right here and point out that this is the way socialization has been imposed upon the United States. They didn't come at us and give us Social Security in one fell swoop or the Federal Reserve Act in one fell swoop. They started over a long period of time, and they hit us with one and then two and then three and then five and then nine and then 11. You know, just take a look at gun control legislation. You've got 25,000 gun control acts, 25,000 statutes that regulate guns in the United States. Now, that's just about as effective a gun control program as any country in the world has, especially since our Constitution has enshrined in the Second Amendment the right to keep and bear arms. And, by God, government has not taken away from you your right to keep and bear arms. They've just regulated you to the point that it's no longer productive. Just like your right to travel. You have an inalienable right to travel, but it's so regulated that your automobile is just totally useless to you for any form of travel other than the regulation prescribed by your government. Now, that's the way the game has been played. And they're doing the same thing with taking your land and your property. They're not coming after your property. They're not coming out here and taking your land away. They're going to regulate your land, just like your automobiles and your guns, until, for all practical purposes, it's totally valueless to you. And they've got a number of tricks. And the good thing about the Ecologic Powerhouse is that every issue will have articles in there exposing these nuances and these little tricks that they're using. Now, on the Senate side, Senator Michael Crapo, Republican of Idaho, chairs the Environment and Public Works Subcommittee on Fisheries, Wildlife, and Water. He and Pombo were elected to Congress the same year, and they discovered that they shared many of the same values and goals. Both are now in powerful positions, and they will coordinate their efforts to reform the ESA. That's the Environmental or the Endangered Species Act. Now, both men agree that without grassroots support, there is no hope of passage. So the National Endangered Species Act Reform Coalition has existed since 1992. It consists of about 100 organizations, trade associations, and businesses. It's managed by the Beltway law firm, Van Ness Feldman. They have developed what they call a new approach to reforming the Endangered Species Act. Their plan calls for, first of all, giving the states the option of partnering with the feds in implementing the ESA. Two, expanding voluntary conservation efforts. And three, providing additional funding for state programs. Their overall emphasis is to promote species recovery rather than species listing. A second grassroots ESA coalition is also developing a reform strategy for the 109th Congress. This group has also been around since the early 1990s, and it represents grassroots organizations across the country. This group has no staff, and it's managed by a group of volunteers who operate by sheer determination. Their goal is to repeal the ESA. They know, however, that repeal is not yet a realistic possibility. Therefore, their strategy will likely be to advance the minimum goals that define real reform and work toward incorporating these goals into single-focus bills for consideration by Congress. These goals would include such things as compensation for land use restrictions imposed by critical habitat designation, elimination of third-party lawsuits, or at least setting a higher bar for standing in citizen suits. The wide difference in the goals of these two groups could kill reform efforts again. So it's imperative that all who want ESA reform find a way to avoid fighting with each other and direct all of our energies toward gaining whatever ground may be won. Opponents of the ESA reform want to strengthen the law by relaxing listing requirements and expanding habitat designations. A third influence on the ESA reform will come from the administration. The point man for the environmental, or in this case, the Endangered Species Act implementation, is Craig Manson, Assistant Secretary for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks in the Department of the Interior. This administration's environmental policy arises from the philosophy that conservation should be voluntary rather than forced. The function of government should be to encourage and to provide incentives rather than to force through regulations. Therefore, new programs are being developed that could transform critical habitat on private property into something that looks very much like the land set-aside programs in the Department of Agriculture. Instead of forcing people to stop using their land because it's home for a bug-eyed beetle, the government might offer the landowner payments in exchange for leaving the land idle. This solution addresses the compensation issue and would eliminate endless litigation. Opponents of reform, however, despise this option. The president's recent cooperative conservation executive order also provides that the Environmental Species Act reform opportunities. This executive order provides the authority for agencies to modify rules of implementation, thereby requiring field personnel to comply with measures designed to protect private property rights. This administration is also working to change the agency culture that remains from the 1990s. The Department of Interior was filled with activists from environmental organizations during the Clinton-Gore-Babbitt years, and because most of these people are covered by civil service rules, they cannot be summarily replaced. Mid-level management positions must be approved by the assistant secretary, and Manson said that his approval is granted only to individuals who have demonstrated agreement with the administration's philosophy. Turnover in these positions has been slow during the first Bush term. It will accelerate during the second term, Manson said, that he has received a clear message to move forward in the second term. It is important that all grassroots activists keep abreast of the strategies and campaigns that are being developed for the next Congress. And we'll keep you posted in these pages in our online publications and, as appropriate, though, our online email alert network. Now, I'm not opposed to these endangered species being preserved. For instance, out in California, there was a bird out there called the California condor. I think that California condor should be preserved if possible, but not at the expense of private property and private landowners and private rights. Now, there are other solutions. You know, God instructed us to dress and keep the garden. Let's concentrate on dressing and keeping the garden and less on stealing people's property. Now, there's another story in here, and I'm not going to have time to cover it. But our legislature just passed an eye-popping program here in Missouri. And it's entitled in this article here, Paul Revere Under Attack. I'm going to cover some of it here for you, but the essential argument is this. Highway 160, the environmentalists here, want to designate this highway, this road, as a special road, and they've gotten it passed through the legislature, and now they're out here talking to the landowners. Now, the landowners here in Missouri are pretty hip to the UN radical environmental program of impairing our property rights. So, listen to this. It's really simple to detect programs coming to your hometown. Just look up Agenda 21 or Sustainable Development on a Google search and see which chapter tells about the controls planned for your local government. Although the agenda is easy reading, for some reason people can't see beyond the incentives when the programs are presented to your city council, county board of supervisors, or commission. But it's no secret. The International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives is responsible for passing all of this good stuff from the United Nations down to your county or hometown. But most elected officials never check to see where the information comes from, so they don't suspect that there's a hidden agenda in this carrot being dangled before our eyes. So let someone try to educate and warn the public about the dangers of these programs, and it is a well-known fact that modern-day Paul Revere's will be attacked as being paranoid kooks connected with black helicopters and extremists. And why is that? Well, could it be that they're afraid people will begin to listen and just might start doing a little research and find out the truth? Now, Ray Cuneo from Missouri is an exceptional individual who has worked in business on an international level. He's a successful businessman and farmer. He's a community-minded fellow, and he serves on numerous boards and committees. Ray is informed. He knows many of the legislators in his home state, as well as in Washington, D.C., and he is a trusted consultant, and he's known nationally for his advocacy of private property. This is not the picture that the St. Louis Post-Dispatch painted of Cuneo, and I was shocked when I read a recent article by reporter Tom Muhlenbrock that would lead the reader to view Cuneo as some weird conspiracy guy slinking around wearing camouflage holding secret meetings. The following is an excerpt from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch story. I'm not going to read it, but it was really disparaging of this fellow Cuneo. But then most of the newspapers, you know, are controlled by the media giants. And they've got an agenda. It's called the New World Order. So let's face reality. Now, apparently, this bureaucrat, Scott Taylor, of the Missouri Department of Transportation, has the job of selling the Ozark Hillbillies on this good deal called the Scenic Byway. Taylor is just doing his job, and apparently he has the media advantage and the favor of the liberal St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Now, Missouri may have hills, but Missourians are certainly not hillbillies. They've been targeted for a number of programs that would take control of the state, and they have learned to hold their ground. Now, the reason that I use programs instead of the United States programs is because these programs originate from the United Nations, not the Congress of the United States. For extensive reading on this subject, just go to www.freedom.org. Again, that's www.freedom.org, and explore the thousands of resources. Numerous local groups in Missouri and Illinois have invited Ray Cuneo to explain the documentation behind scenic byways. Cuneo uses government documents, and often the documentation reveals that the program promoters have made their presentation based on situational ethics or plain old lies, whichever term you prefer. In 1997, did the St. Louis Post-Dispatch check out the Man and Biosphere program planned for the Ozarks? Did they question the Congressional Commission who came from Washington, D.C. to hold hearings and meet with the people of Missouri to get this global program stopped? Did they care that the MAB infringed on the sovereignty of the United States, or was this article an attempt to demean Ray Cuneo? Well, Scott Taylor said they think we're dancing this federal money carrot in front of them and not telling them about the regulations that come with it. That's not our intent at all. Well then, Mr. Taylor, just what is your intent? And how does this guy Taylor explain the documents that say the scenic byway programs basically control the intrinsic values as far as the eye can see and the adjacent area along the byway corridor? Just who is it that's going to determine this intrinsic value? If those intrinsic values are on private property, who's going to control those intrinsic values on that private property? And why is the word preserve used so often in their documents? What does preserve really mean? What's the legal connotation that goes with that word, especially if they're referring to private property? And what right does a stakeholder have making decisions on any individual's personal private property? And why would the corridor management plan of the Great River Road in Illinois National Scenic Byway say in Illinois numerous spurs that depart the byway and byway view shed to provide access to sites and features? Features and resources served by the spur invite the traveler to park, get out of the car, walk, and enjoy the identified resources. Well, excuse me, but let's be real specific about whose property these people are enjoying. The scenic byway people say the only regulatory authority that the byway program has is a prohibition against additional billboards. Well, why don't you go to www.scenic.org for billboard and telecommunication references. In Illinois, residents were told by byway promoters that any signs already located were grandfathered in. They could stay. Well, these were not billboards, but small signs with local orchard and restaurant advertising on them. It was soon discovered that the signs were not registered with the state as per the requirements made in the 1970s, and the signs had to be removed. And the mom-and-pop stores all suffered. So much for grandfathering and the sales pitch of economic development. If the tourists can't find the shops, they can't spend their money. And this much is true. The byway program has no regulatory authority. But what about other federal agencies and stakeholders that are involved with the scenic byway programs? And what about the scenic parkway along the New River in West Virginia, where the National Park Service was given the authority and they're an agency that can enforce regulations? Well, just ask Ann Roach and the New River Friends, who have fought for several years to keep their homes because the NPS says they clutter the view shed and they want to tear them down. So read firsthand what these folks have been fighting at www.newriverfriends.org. Now, these are only a few illustrations as to why people are no longer believing representatives promoting their programs. Asking legitimate questions is not being brainwashed. And it's not Mr. Taylor's fault that people have begun to see that these agencies hope stays hidden. But then that brings another question. Why won't Mr. Taylor debate Ray Cuneo? Now, they slipped that through our legislature here on the Highway 160, and we just had a meeting here recently. Anytime that they want to put one of these byways or viewways through and regulate your private property, they do it with your consent. So they bring taxpayer dollars in here and ask you to sign a piece of paper. And on that piece of paper will be the terms and conditions of the contract, whereby you're going to give up your private property rights for this carrot, these taxpayer dollars that you want, that they're holding out in front of you. That's the way they do that. So they come over here to me and they say, well, sign up here and we'll give you this money. You use this money any way you want. And then I can't put up billboards and I can't build buildings within so many feet of Highway 160. And then I'm going to be regulated and controlled over the amount of water that I can draw out of the ground. And I got to put a meter on my well. These are just some of the byway programs that are coming to a town near you. So be alert to it. Now listen, if you want to stay on top of Agenda 21 and what government in the United Nations want to do, they're not going to take your property at gunpoint. They're going to trick you and induce you into signing it away. That's what they did with Social Security. That's what they did to you with the marriage license, birth certificate, and business licenses. And that's what they're going to do with your private property rights. And you can stay abreast of that by subscribing to the Ecologic Powerhouse. And you can get a subscription. I don't know what the price is. Many of these come in here and we don't send money. They send them to us. And I read them, or I pick them up, and I share them with my listening audience. This is called the Ecologic Powerhouse, 1200 North White Sands Boulevard, Suite 110, Alamogordo, New Mexico. I highly recommend it. That zip code is 88310. Again, that's the Ecologic Powerhouse, 1200 North White Sands Boulevard, Suite 110, Alamogordo, New Mexico, 88310. All right, our time is just about up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website at georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just go to the Law School website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. There's the signal. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, of course, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.